You're listening to Charlottesville's Podcasting Network at cvillepodcast.com. Lectures, radio shows, and more are available on demand at cvillepodcast.com. Now available through email, sign up on our homepage. I'm Dan Gould. The program you are about to hear is part of the Virginia Festival of the Book, held in Charlottesville, Virginia, from March 21st through 25th, 2012. The festival was sponsored by the Virginia Foundation for the Humanities. It was originally recorded in the City of Charlottesville Council Chambers by Charlottesville's TV 10.
Good afternoon. On behalf of the Virginia Foundation for the Humanities, I want to welcome you to this afternoon's session. My name is Dave Norris, and I am a member of the Charlottesville City Council, and for the last 4 years was mayor of the City of Charlottesville. Before we get started, I want to please remind everyone to turn off your cell phones. That's been an issue with some of the panels this week. We want to thank the sponsors of this event, Davenport and Company. We want to thank the City of Charlottesville and Channel 10 for hosting this and for broadcasting this event today. Of course, the Virginia Foundation for the Humanities, Celebrate 250. This event was made possible by a number of individuals and organizations, and we thank all of them. And for those of you who are in attendance and appreciate the work of the Festival of the Book, we hope that even though this is a free festival, it's free of charge, but it is not free of cost, please go online and give back or pick up an envelope and help with some of the costs of the festival so that we can sustain this wonderful event for many years to come. There will be evaluations, I believe, handed out at the end of the session, or maybe they've already been handed out, so please give us your feedback as well, and there will be book signing after the presentation today. We are delighted to be joined by royalty today. And it's not very often that we have a member of a royal family here in Charlottesville. And so we're thrilled to have King Peggy with us. And you may have seen King Peggy, otherwise known as Pegeline Bartels, on CBS Sunday Morning. You may have seen her recently in O Magazine, on NPR's Weekend Edition. You may have heard her interviewed there. You may have seen her on CBS This Morning, on the Tavis Smiley Show on PBS, on the Colbert Report. She's been all over the national media talking about this fascinating book, which I have had the pleasure to read, and it's a great read. Many of you know that over the last few years, Charlottesville has been developing a sister city relationship with the city of Winneba in Ghana. And some of us in the room, I know there's several people in the room, including myself, who have had the great pleasure of visiting Winneba and spending time in Ghana. I've been there twice in the last few years. I know Dale Johnson in the room has been to Ghana at least a dozen times over the last 5-10 years. Krista Farrell and others have had the wonderful opportunity to visit your home country. And in the book, they talk about how hospitable and friendly the people of Ghana are, and it's absolutely true. If you have a chance to read the book, you will. The things that they talk about in the book about the friendliness and the graciousness of the Ghanaian people is completely true. And so we're thrilled to have this event in conjunction with our sister city relationship. Winneba is not too far from, is it Otuam?
Otuam.
Otuam, yes. Which is King Peggy's home community. And in fact, Winneba plays a minor role in the story in the book. There's several scenes that take place at the Lagoon Lodge, which is where we stayed when we were in Winneba, and some other parts of Winneba. So, without any further ado, I'd like to introduce our two speakers tonight, this afternoon. Of course, Pegeline Bartels was born in Ghana in 1953 and moved to Washington, D.C. in her early 20s to work at Ghana's embassy. She became an American citizen in 1997. In 2008, she was chosen to be king of Otuam, a Ghanaian village of 7,000 souls on the west coast of Africa. A devout Christian, she lives in Silver Spring, Maryland, still works at the Ghanaian embassy, and spends several weeks each year in Ghana. Eleanor Herman is the author of, she's the co-author of this book. She's the author of three books of women's history, the New York Times bestseller, Sex with Kings, Sex with the Queen, and Mistress of the Vatican. Her profile of Peggy was a cover story for the Washington Post magazine, and Eleanor lives in McLean, Virginia. If any of you have had the chance to read the book, you know that one of the characters in the book is King Peggy's brother, Papa Warrior. And Papa Warrior is with us today. And we're very pleased to have you as well, sir.
Thank you.
So Eleanor Herman is going to start us off and speak for a few minutes, and then we'll have King Peggy speak, and then we're going to have a PowerPoint presentation, and then we'll open up for Q&A. And now, well, Eleanor, I'll let you take it away. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Dave. About 3 years ago, I happened to find myself at a reception at the Embassy of Ghana, and I didn't know a soul there. And I felt uncharacteristically awkward. Usually I'm a life of the party author, and I didn't know who to talk to or what to say. I was standing awkwardly by myself. And then I have this game I play with myself, which I heartily recommend to you all if you're ever at a party where you don't know a soul. And that is, look about you, find the most interesting looking person there is, and march up with your hand extended and introduce yourself. And you'll have a lot of fun. So I'm looking around trying to select a victim for this. And the problem at an African embassy reception is everybody looks so interesting, the way they dress, the way they're talking and moving. So it was difficult. But I saw a lady, a very dignified person, standing off to the side on a kind of platform, just surveying the scene as if she were the queen of that place. Now, little did I know she was, in fact, the king. I went up and I introduced myself, and she said she was Peggy Bartels, a secretary there. And it disturbed me that she wasn't eating or drinking when the rest of the party was turning into some kind of a bacchanalia with food and alcohol, and everybody was having a great time, and she wasn't eating or drinking. I said, could I get you something to eat or drink? And she said, oh, no, I'm afraid I cannot eat or drink in public. You see, I am a king in Ghana, and we are not allowed to do that. I said, you are a king of what? And she told me the story of how she had recently been chosen king, and they have their rules of etiquette. They're not allowed to be seen shoving food down their mouth in public and this kind of thing. And I had written 3 books on very interesting little angles of women's history. I'm fascinated by, you know, in communities, in historical periods where women were not allowed to have power. Some of them always managed to do so anyway. And it's the intersection of women, royalty, and power that fascinates me. And I was talking to a woman king, not a queen, and she'll get into why that is in a minute. I said, I'm an author, and I want to write my next book on you. She went up to her office, and she actually brought down photographs of her coronation, which in Ghana is called an installment. And I went home, and I told my husband I found the subject of my next book, but it will require me to spend a month in the African bush in the fall. And he wasn't too thrilled with that, but I think it worked out well. When I got there, one thing that Nana, that's what we call King Peggy, Nana had forgotten to tell me was that there was no running water in that town, and you had to bathe in a bucket. And, as you know, I have a certain tendency towards obsessive-compulsive disorder where you need to keep clean all the time. And here it was 95 degrees, and my bath was a bucket. And when I first got there and I looked at this bucket and it looked at me, I almost turned around and came home. I thought, how can I live, you know, bathing in a bucket for a month? But I decided I would give it a shot before I went to the airport the next day. And in a few minutes, the housekeeper, who's also in the book, Aggie, knocked on Nana's bedroom door and said, Nana, the white woman is crying in the shower. Which was true, because you'd hear the slap of water as I'm trying to figure out how to do this thing, and then a So, needless to say, I did not go home the next day. I made friends with the bucket, and I had been very privileged the last 3 years to be with Nana on her trips there, to see her many challenges in Africa. Just about everything is a challenge, but there are also many blessings there, faith and friends and family and happiness that I think many of us don't really have here. So without further ado, let me turn it over to Nana King Peggy to tell you her story herself.
Thank you, Mayor. Thank you, Elena. Thank you, Papa. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm very happy to be here with you all today. In fact, I love your town. I was telling Elena on the way coming here, I said, you know what? I've been to all the states for my book signing, and this is the best place for me. Yeah. I love it. The hotel rooms were so nice. The bed wasn't so high, like all the hotels I've been and I've seen. I've been observing people. They're very calm and collective. And I love you all very much for coming here today. Of course, my name is Peglin Bartels, as you know, it's been mentioned earlier on. But they call me Nana, and I'm Kin Peggy. And in the year 2008, this call that I had at 4 a.m. in the morning changed my life to be a kin. It happened 4 o'clock in the morning in August of 2008. I was fast asleep. And the reason why I had the call at 4 o'clock in the morning is because Ghana is 5 hours ahead of United States. And usually my brother here always call around that time to argue with me about certain issues. So I made up my mind not to pick up the phone because I was tired. And the phone kept on ringing. And I said, let me go and fight with him before I sleep. I pick up the phone and then the person said, Nana. And Nana is used for a king, a queen, or a woman who has grandparents, you know, grandchildren, that they normally call them Nana. I'm a childless woman. I don't have any children. I wasn't a king then. I wasn't a queen. So when this my cousin called me Nana, I said, what are you trying to say? You know, it's 4 o'clock in the morning in the United States. I'm tired. What is it that you need? Because sometimes when you get those calls from Africa, they want money. And I said, give it to me straight. It's the middle of the month. I don't have any money right now. What is that you need? And then he said, oh, no, Nana, I don't need anything. Your uncle, the king, had gone to a village, and he's not coming back anytime soon. And that's the code that they normally use for kings and the queen when they pass on. They don't come to tell you that the person, the king, is dead. Even if the king, you know, goes to, you know, hospital, they don't tell you that the king is sick in the hospital. They said the king is going to the village. So when he said that, I was shocked. And he said, the king is going to the village, your uncle, and he's not coming back anytime soon, and you've been chosen as a king. I said, as a king? Because usually, whenever they say king, all that comes to people's mind is a male. And besides, my town has never taken a woman as a king before. Neither is my family. So I was really shocked. And I thought, you know, it was a prank. I said, listen, don't just play with me. I'm going back to bed. And then he said, oh, please, Nana. And he kept on calling me Nana, Nana. And then something told me to be quiet and listen to him. I kept quiet. And then he told me all what happened, that they selected 25 male of my family from the royal family. Of course, my brother wasn't among because he's young. You know, normally they take the eldest ones first. And then they took 25 males, and then I'm the only woman that they took, and I was the last person on the list. Why they chose me, I don't know. And they normally go to the ancestral shrine. I don't know whether you believe in your ancestors that are gone or not, but in Africa, we do believe in that. And then they pour libation. The reason why they use libation is in the ancient time, when the Portuguese and the English people came to Ghana or African villages, they normally give them schnapps. And that's what they know, you know, to use. So they pour the libation, and then they mention your name, and when it vapors up, it means you are the one. But when it sinks, you are not. So they mention all this, you know, normally they take people who are morally sound, you know, educated, you know, that, you know, when you are growing in African village or African town, the elders tend to observe how you interact with people, the way you do things, whether you are a good person, a good girl, a good boy, or whatever. So they do all that. They take it into consideration. I didn't know until I became the king that whilst I was growing up, they were watching me. I didn't even know. And I'm glad that I was a good girl. So they pour all the libation for the 25 mil. Nothing happened. And then they mention my name, and the thing vapor up. They looked at each other. And then they said, let's do it again. They did it again, and they looked at each other. He has an elderly man who are 80, 70, and 60 years old. And then one said, let's do it again. And they did it the third time, and then they said, this is it. We have our king. And that's how they chose me as their king. And they told me that I have to be home within 10 days for my coronation. And being a secretary, definitely I have to report to my ambassador. By then, our head of state was coming. So I told the ambassador that, listen, this your secretary is going to be a king. And he looked at me as if I was sick. And he said, are you okay? And I said, of course I'm okay, boss. And he said, I said, if I'm not okay, I would have put sugar in your coffee. But I brought you nice coffee with milk and everything. Then he said, go and have a seat and I'll call you back. I went and sat down and he called me back again. And then he said, are you okay? Are you tired? I said, I'm okay, boss. This your secretary is going to be a king. We nearly had an argument in that room. So then he said, you know what? You're going to be a very good king because you run my office nicely. You do everything to the perfect. And I said, why didn't you tell me from the beginning you made me to worry that I'm sick? And he said, I want to make sure, because in Ghana, for a woman to be a king, it's unheard of. But at the moment, we have only three women who are kings in Ghana, and I'm the third one. So he gave me 10 days after my head of state came and left. So I went to Ghana. And when I went to Ghana, you know, I thought being chosen a king, I was going to be having everything on a silver platter with good palace, good car, and they're going to pay for all my coronation. Ladies and gentlemen, I had to end up paying for my own coronation. And I was fortunate to go with my last paycheck that I hid it inside my bra. Because my mom told me that when you have money, you don't want anybody to get it from you. Put it there. You are the only person who can go there. So I put it there. And then in the morning, they came to my room. When I went, I had to sleep with 10 of my aunties. And I told them, I said, listen, I'm from the United States. I'm an adult. Why do I have to sleep with all of you? And then she said, we have to educate you. There are some etiquette that you have to go through. I said, oh, my word. I'm going to sleep with all those elders. I have no choice. I have to. So they taught me how to walk, how to eat, how to talk to people in a big debar. And then when they told me how to walk, I said, in the United States, if I walk like this, I'll be hit by a car. Because we don't have time to walk so slowly, turning your neck and, you know, just looking at people. They may think I'm getting sick. And they said, Nana, nobody will hurt you or any car will hurt you. So I went through it. And then, you know, the festivities, I have to end up paying with the drinks, the food, and everything. And then we did all that. So after that, then it got to me that there's something wrong with my town. So when I got back, I said to myself, there's something wrong with my town. But before I took this kinship, before I went home, something strange, you know, happened to me. Because when they called me, I didn't want to, you know, even take this responsibility. Because in Africa, if you become a king or a queen, you have to really help your town to reap the fruit of your labor. And here is a secretary. You know, we don't make much money. I have my own bills. I'm still driving my 1992 Honda Accord. That sometimes it makes a funny noise. And I said, how am I going to change them? 7,000 people. And whilst I was pondering on it, I started hearing voices. And I said to myself, am I sick? Do I need to see a doctor? Because I've never had anything like this in my life. And the voice kept on telling me, Nana, go for it. It's your destiny. It's not every day that a woman is born to be a king or someone is born to be a king. So go for it. You'll be helped. People are behind you. There are some super beings around you that are going to educate and help you. I said, super beings? Okay. I said, Nana is getting sick, so I'll wait. And then I was going to work because my car is 1992 Honda Accord. It can break along the way, and I don't want to become nuisance whilst it's a rush hour. So I normally go through back doors in the morning. And there was a little ravine in a park. As soon as I get to that junction, making a left, then the voice will come again. Nana, it's your destiny. You have to go for it. People are going to help you. You have people around you that are protecting, and they are going to help you. And I said, who are these people? You know, and I thought I was hearing voices. It happened 3 times. And I said to myself, I'll go for it. And that's the time that I told my ambassador, the boss, and also I went to Ghana. So when I came back, as I, you know, left it with you all, I came back and I realized that there was something wrong with that town.
So I said to myself, now is my challenge. I've really gone for the coronation. Now I'm the king, real king, a woman. I have to prove myself. So I started pondering. And then I was in my office in a church called Shiloh Baptist Church in Landover, Maryland, with their pastor called Pastor B. Lewis Colleton, came to my office that they saw the article in the Washington Post. And they have also prayed very hard to have an African village to help. And God had answered them, and I'm the one. And I look at the pastor as if the pastor too is not feeling well. Because I said, I just, you know, got installed, and here is a man telling me that God has also spoken to him, and now they have got the African village, and that they are going to help me. It was like a mixed feeling. It was like a sweet and sour pork to me. And I said to myself, okay, pastor. And then he said, we have to give you a covenant to prove to you that we're going to help you. And it's true. They had me in the church, and they gave me the covenant that they were going to help my town. And they went with me to my town. And when they were going, Miss Alina Diamond also wants to come. And I said, what does this white woman want from me in my village? I mean, I myself, you know, I don't even like to stay in that village. And here is a woman leaving the husband to come with me. Then I said, the voice is telling me the truth. So I went with them. And then when we went, things were very nice. When I got to the village, I realized there was no running water. The children had to wake up 5 o'clock in the morning to go and fetch water. And then the teachers came to tell me that the children get so tired when they come to classes and they can't even learn anything. And, you know, that some of the children are of school age. They were roaming about in my beaches without going to school. So the Shiloh Baptist Church and Miss Alina Diamond saw all that. So they started working. And then they helped me. Miss Diamond gave me $7,000 to bring about very clean borehole water. Because the water that they were drinking, I wouldn't even give it to my enemy. Miss Diamond shelled out $7,000 from her own pocket. We brought up one nice borehole water. The church people also gave me $7,000. We had a second water. And then the third one was from Masonic Lodge. They also gave me $7,000. And we had 3 bowl clean water for them. And to be honest with you, United States people, regardless, are the most generous people on this planet. And I keep on telling everybody, you know, when you go to Africa, they think, you know, you are from the United States, you come with a gun to shoot them. I say, we can shoot whenever you really come and misbehave. But we are not crazy. So I had this 3 borehole water for them. And then the church also helped me to have some children that are not going to school. And also those are in the school that their parents can't afford. They took 20 of them. And Miss Elena Diamond also had 2 that they are getting them up to university level. So in other words, with my few years there, I've been able to do what my other male counterparts couldn't do. When I went, you know, and having a meeting with them, it was a battle. The men really fought me so hard. And I said, you're going to fight me. I'm a chosen king, and I'm going to fight back. If we are going to be in a war, I'll be in front, and I'm going to be in front. So we had a big meeting because all my funds in the town, the fishing fee, and then the things that we do with my land fees, all my elders had embezzled the funds. When you ask them, they shrug their shoulders. They don't know what their money is. And I say, you know what? We're going to have a bank. And they said, don't bring that to United States nonsense. I said, nonsense? I'm a king. I'm a chosen king. And I was chosen for a reason, and I'm here to help. So I just went and worked on this thing, and I was able to bring about a bank. So I opened up a bank, which we really have really collected the money that we have really saved a little bit that I'm going to use for other things in the village. So then the men realized that this king is not a joke. Because when we go to a meeting, they will really, you know, fight me and say, you are a woman, sit down for us to tell you what to do. And I said, woman, you shut up and sit down. And then for some reason, they will sit down. And for the fact that I'm now helping them with these few years that I've been in power, now they really listen to me. And they help me a lot. And then also, during my time of a coronation, I realized my palace was really in a very horrible state. There is no way I'll be able to stay there. So when I go to Ghana with my visitors, we lived in a hotel. But Mrs. Diamond and I, we lived in one of my cousin's house, which wasn't really up to par, but it was better than my palace.
Oh, yeah.
And by then, my uncle was also in a morgue for 2.5 years. I had to do all that before burying him. And I said to myself, am I going to do it? God, help me. And I prayed very loud about it. I cried about it, and I was helped. I don't know how I was able to renovate the palace with my little money, and I was able to bury my uncle. So then they all realized that this woman is really for real. So I'm really helping them. And now I've done a lot for them. And last year when we went, you know, we took a lot of children, 1,400 people that they want to go to school, that they can't go, that my people are going to do it. The church and the good people from United States are going to sponsor them. And also, we realize that we need more water where people are still helping it, because there are 7,000 people and we need to help them. So we are doing all that. And we also went with eyeglasses. Some of them can't see properly. And then we did it. This year, we are going with a lot of eyeglasses and the doctors to help them. And also, my hospital wasn't that great. We are having people to help us to renovate it. We having a fundraising to raise an ambulance, because most of the time, I understand that when women want to have children, they just put a blanket on the floor and put water on it, and then they deliver on it, which sometimes the baby doesn't come out well. Or if it's a very complicated issue, like if somebody is having a stroke or heart attack or very hard labor, they have to take a taxi. And most of the time, they don't make it to the hospital, to Winnebar or Elmina or the very close big areas. So all these things, you know, I said, I'm going to bring it about. And God is really working hard through the people of the United States and through my own little paycheck that I have. People tell me, why don't you get a new car? You are a king. I say, king has to do the first things first. And for my people, a leadership is about giving yourself to the people first. So long as this car is taking me around and I'm able to fix it whenever there's a little somewhere, I'm going to work on it. So this King Peggy here is for real. I'm not a woman that is going to be in a palace to be pampered. Even though when I go to Ghana, they pamper me. But while they are pampering me, in my mind, I said, this pampering comes with a lot of responsibilities. I have to better their lives. And that's what I'm all about. So I'm just going to show you some of the things I've done for them. And then after that, we just get questions and answers. And I'll sign the books for you. So this is my story. King Peggy, I'm still working as a secretary at the Embassy of Ghana. I'm still driving my 1992 Honda Accord, and I live in my very modest condo, one-bedroom condo, that my brother came, and my living room is like a little, you know, place. He puts his shirt here and there, and we are always fighting about it. So this is King Peggy's story. This is Map of Africa. This is Map of Africa, and Ghana is all the way up there where the red arrow is pointing. And my town is at the bottom. I'm in the coastal area. I have a very beautiful beach, even though my infrastructure is not that great, but still I'm working on it. So that's where I am. And that's my town, the people. Before I took over, the women were so intimidated by the male. Whenever there's a festival, they don't allow the women to come out and enjoy themselves. When I took over, I told them, I said, women are also human beings. Nobody touches any woman. If there's a festival, they have to come out and enjoy themselves. So I've really empowered the women not to be afraid, and also not to think that they need a man to be complete. If you are married, it's fine. If you get a boyfriend, it's fine. But you have to get a good one, not the one that is going to batter you. And also, you can do a lot for yourself. Even though if you don't have a husband or a boyfriend, there are so many things that you can do for yourselves. So now the women here are so happy. So whenever there is a festival, they come out to enjoy themselves. And that's my mother, the woman who really made me who I am today. When I was growing up, she taught me the morals of life and how to be strong, and how to have an iron balls, and whenever there is time for me to use it, I have to use it. And that's her. She's no more with us, but I know wherever she is, she's looking out for me. And that's my mother. And that's me and Papa over there. when we're growing up, anytime we're going to church, Papa, you know, doesn't want to go, and he would come with all kinds of excuses. I want this, I want that, and, you know, we're coming from a room, both of us, we had a good fight. And then there was a photographer standing there, he shot us. And that's me and Papa when we were young. And that's me when I came from London, I went to school in England. Because my mom, when she had a divorce, you know, I was very close to my mom. Papa and I thought we made our mother to get a divorce, not knowing that we were children. We didn't know what it was all about. So everywhere that our mother was going, we'd be following her. So my mother got to a conclusion that, listen, you have to get out of this town or country. If not, when I die or I'm no more on this earth, you become something else. You can't able to handle anything. And she knows that I love food. So she said, go to London and study catering. So I went to London and I studied catering. And then I came back here on the holidays and I saw that I love United States due to the fast pace and everything. And there was a friend of my father called Alex Kwesi-Nsaki who gave me a job at the embassy. He is not the one. He is also an ambassador. There was a reception and then I was telling him how good the reception was. And that's me and my other ambassador. And that's me in my little office at the embassy. In case I knew I was going to be a king someday, I wouldn't have shown my thighs and my legs. But it's too late now. And that's my town. We have a Methodist church up there, and then now the women are empowered that they can do things for themselves. They have open little kiosk where they sell bread, donuts, and anything that will bring them income. They shouldn't have to wait to get married before they can make a living. So now this is my town. And also this is when I was coronated. I was, you know, in my palanquin. To be honest with you, my heart was in my palm because I wasn't sure the people were good enough to carry me, but, you know, they did. And I'm so happy that they didn't throw me down. And this is my soul. You know, in Africa, when you're a king or a queen, they tend to think that you have a lot of enemies around you. But if you have a virgin girl sitting in front of you all the time, and if an evil spirit is coming and they see a virgin, they turn away. And that's a young girl they gave me. She's going to school and she's doing well. And that's me and my linguist. When you come to Ghana, you can't come close. Everything you have to pass through him before you can really, you know, talk to me. So these are me and my elders and all my other people that they are sitting in the palace with me. And these are canoes, you know, made by some of the fishermen in my village that they used to go fishing. Most of them did it with their own, you know, handwork. And these are some of the canoes. And those that they can't do it, they call something drag fishing. They use net. They put it inside the sea 4 o'clock in the morning, and by 9 o'clock they go and drag it out and drag all the fish. And that's a drag, you know, fishing. And this woman is so happy that I empowered her that she can do things for herself. So normally the women now go to the fishing village and buy the fish, clean them, and then sell them to other places. So this is what the woman is doing. And this is my Chiami. He is also 80 years old, but he doesn't want to grow old. He has his own farm where he does farming like a pineapple, and that's what, you know, he's coming from the farm with.
Yeah, that's. I was just going to say, is there anybody who would like to ask a question while we're waiting? Oh, right. I'm sorry. Before you ask a question, we do need you to speak into the microphones. And
real name over there and the meaning of it.
The meaning of my name? Peglin Bartels is the name given to me by my family because most of the African, you know, especially in Ghana, that they come from the coastal area, we do have a lot of European names. And that's the name they gave it to me, Peglin Bartels. Actually, they named me Elizabeth. But, you know, whilst I was in school, there was a girl called Elizabeth. She was so dumb. And I just, you know, I changed my name, Elizabeth. There was a singer in the United States called Peggy Lee. So I just went to my parents and I said, that girl is so dumb. I'm changing my name to Peggy Lee. And then I did it.
And you have a royal name as well.
Yes.
Tell us about your royal name.
My royal name is Nana Amoa Afeni the Sixth.
That's the name.
Okay. Because they usually give you the name of your, you know, ancestors. The person who really, you know, got the town 200 years ago is Nana Amoa Afeni the First. So we go, you know, after anybody. So if I go, the next person will be called Nana Amoa Afeni the Seventh. Yes.
Thank you. Other questions? Yes, ma'am.
I understand that you are Christian, but are there Muslims also in Ghana?
Yes, we have Muslims in Ghana. I can say 90% of Ghanaians are Christians and 10% are Muslims. And they get along very, very well. Yes.
Other questions? Yes.
How much vacation does a secretary get? How much time do you spend in Ghana?
In Ghana Embassy, they give us 1 month vacation every year. So normally I go every September, at the end of September, and I get back October ending. And sometimes when I go and the issue is a little bit steep, I tend to tell them I'm not feeling well, I'm doing a lot of work here, so they let me stay for at least a week more.
Yes, sir.
Well, you seem very comfortable, and I'm enjoying hearing your stories, and I'd like to hear, like, how did you learn to be a storyteller, and what was your experience with storytelling?
You know, it's very strange. Everybody keeps on telling me that even on the TV, I was so relaxed. But I think it's due to my faith. And I realize that this, my calling, is not an ordinary calling. Because I myself, sometimes I sit down and I say to myself, am I the one on the TV? Am I the one speaking? I don't know where I got all the strength from. So I realized this is a strength that I have that I didn't know I have. And my calling is real.
And as an aside, you know, before you go on to CBS or Colbert, there's just so much energy and so much nervousness. And our publicist, who's been in this business for decades, said he couldn't do it. He'd be so nervous he would just faint, you know, when they bring you on and there's music and there's lights and there's a crowd cheering. And I asked Nana, I said, why are you not nervous at all? I'm nervous just sitting here in the green room. I'm sweating. And she says, well, Elena, she said, they just ask me questions and I tell them the truth. She said, now I would be nervous if I was lying and couldn't remember what to say.
I just want to welcome you to Charlottesville, and I'm sure that I speak for everyone in this audience that you have a beautiful and very warm spirit. And I just wanted to ask you if you thought that there are a lot of African Americans now who are looking for their ancestry, getting their DNA tested, and if you think the ancestors are waking many of us up to do the right thing for the continent. And to bring some resources that are greatly needed to the continent.
Thank you for your comment. It's all faith. You have to have faith. If it's something that is meant to be, it will be. And since you have gotten some blessings that, you know, some of your brothers and sisters back home doesn't have it, you can always give it. And when you are ready and you pray about it, God will direct you where to go.
And I would advise anybody, black or white, if you have some time and you get your shots, to go to Africa. Ghana's probably the safest place. But still, even there, it's safe, it's friendly, it's wonderful. When you see the level of poverty, when you realize if you're in a village or a town and you have a heart attack, you might die. There's no help for you. When you see that kids aren't getting educated, when you see what a dollar can buy. I mean, I came back after a month there a completely transformed person. I had been subject to bouts of clinical depression up until that point. I came back, I threw my medicine down the toilet, happy that I could flush one, and I've never used them again, and I think it's a great blessing, and I hope that the rest of my life I can help people in Otuam and in other villages throughout Africa, because, you know, I gave money for the borehole. But the fact is, when I'm on my deathbed, and you should all ask yourselves, when you're on your deathbed, whatever age you are, and you look back on your life, are you going to remember the really great Corvette you bought yourself? Or are you going to think, I gave thousands of people water. Thank you, God, that I had the money to be able to do it. And they're still using that well, even though I'm 90 years old here dying in this bed. So it's something that we should all ask ourselves, how can we help others? And especially in Africa, you know, there's so much corruption, and the book does get into that. On the micro and macro level, you have to find a place where you know your money is going to go for good. If you give it to Nana, every dollar goes there, and you can come with us in the fall and see what has been done with it. There are other organizations like World Vision. I sponsor a child through World Vision. It's a Christian organization. You have to look very carefully on how you're going to help Africa. But please look. Even $25, $30 a month can make such a difference. It can save lives. It can provide a future for families. So please give that some thought.
And if I can add one more commercial plug, we are in the process of chartering a new foundation, the Charlottesville Winneba Foundation, to raise money for our new public library in Winneba. And I know that building a library is a goal of yours as well for Etuam.
Yes, Mayor, it's one of my goals because English is the official language in Ghana, and I'm also trying to, build a library, and then we have the 501c3 that people can go to kimpeggy.com and see all this and can also donate through that. And then, also the books are the most easiest thing to collect in the United States. So I've told people to hold on to their books. So we finish the library because I don't want to go there and then the books will be, there idly and then gather some dust. So whenever I finish the library, which I'm really hoping to do it within a year or two, and then, and then also to send computer, because they're not, computer, people, I want to educate them to be very computer literate, because in this modern world, even if you know computer, it's so very hard sometimes to get a job. So how about if you don't know computer? So all those things are on my mind. And I'm going to achieve my goal.
Oh, good.
Yes. King Peggy, again, welcome to Charlottesville.
Yay, okay.
I saw you last Friday on the Morning Joe, and they seemed to love you. I called them up and told them it was a good idea to have you on the show. I would like to ask Dave, is there any way you can...
The gentleman in the orange.
Oh, okay.
Is there any way you can establish a Ghanaian consulate here in Charlottesville so we can eat some good food?
Is there any way that I can do what?
Eat some good food here.
I will do that. Since you've told me, if there's anything that is going to be a festival in this town and you call me at the embassy, I will arrange to bring some Ghanaian, caterers that they'd be more than happy to come at a festival.
We need a good African restaurant here. Yeah. We don't have anything with one South African restaurant, and that's
we're going to work on that.
But Dave, is there a way we can establish a consulate here in Charlottesville? And, bring a good restaurant here and stuff.
That's a wonderful
idea.
Since
we don't have a black on the, council, we can deal with that. Okay?
All right.
We'll talk about that.
All right. We do, in case any of you have not ever been, we do have a wonderful event every August called Taste of Ghana, and Nana Garti is the organizer, one of the organizers. And so that's a great chance to taste some delicious Ghanaian food. But let's continue with the PowerPoint presentation.
Yay. And this is the palace that I inherited. Can you believe this? They expect me to come and stay here, which I'm humbled to stay there. But what about my guest? So I made it a point to renovate it, and also before I bury my uncle. Because if I bury my uncle in this state of place, I'll be in trouble. And this is the house that Eleanor and I stayed whilst, I was, a king when they installed me. It's much better than my palace. So this is where we stayed, even though there was no water. And this is the water that they were drinking before I became a king. And sometimes they said they have little frogs in it, and then the children take the frogs out and drink it. And then they have big stomach like Koshoko, and then also they get sick. Their eyes, they have blood on their eyes and everything. And, this is the water that they were drinking before I became a king. And then when I went with CBS, they also had me to bring some out for them to see the truth. Because I'm always relaxed, as the gentleman said, I'm telling the truth, not a lie. So that's why I'm always relaxed. And this is the children that, they go and fetch water 5 o'clock in the morning from that dirty stream before they go to school. And you can see that they are so tired. And how can they learn whenever they go to school? So the children in the United States are so blessed. So sometimes when I see a child saying that, I'm not going to school today, I'm tired, I say, oh my word, I wish you were in Africa, you'd be more tired than this. And these are my children in the town. They are always happy and laughing. As soon as they see anyone they know you or not, they will laugh. And I said, why are you all laughing all the time? He said, that's all we know. And this had the school, some of the classrooms in the Utram. They had to go to school with a uniform. And some of them are here in the classroom. You can see they have gathered there. They don't have much books to read. They don't have any computer to learn. But I'm trying to bring all about to make a better place for them. And this is me when I really fought hard with my men to go and have a bank. And I opened the bank, and I was the first person that I was, depositing money in the bank. And that's a church, the Shiloh Baptist Church in Landover, and their pastor, Bill Lewis Colleton, giving me the covenant that they were going to help me. And they go to Africa with me every year with Mrs. Diamond. And this is my Chiami, the linguist. He's the one that communicates with the ancestors and do things and tell me things, what they have communicated with. And, you know, when he's pouring the schnapps, he makes sure that half of it is left. So this time, I watch him like an incredible hawk because I want all the schnapps to be poured. So I was watching him with Papa to make sure that the schnapps is, you know, all gone down, not into his throat after that. And that's a new one of the pipes that we have done for them. And this little girl came to help us to unveil the water.
Yeah, beautiful water.
And this is when we went to one of the executives in Salt Pond to talk to them about having a secondary school in the town, because my classes in the school goes up to 9th grade. And most of the time, the girls had to leave the town and the boys had to leave the town on the after 9th grade to go to secondary school. And most of the time, the girls come back home being pregnant, not having a husband, and then their education is wasted. So I have a lot of, you know, child wasted education girls in my town, which I'm trying to change all that. And the boys come back home alcoholics. So now we're also trying to bring secondary school to the town so they'll be very close to their family for supervision and also to be able to enjoy their education to be somebody someday. And this is Mrs. Elena Damo with her two children that she had adopted. And we went last year and tried the glasses on them, and she is also helping with the glasses. And this woman here says she has never seen for a very long time. So when she had the glasses on, she came to me. She said, I didn't realize we have a new king who is so beautiful. And that's why she's so happy, and said a woman king makes her so happy. That's why she's laughing. That's my old palace again. And that's my new palace. I suffered with my little salary to bring this palace about. So I'll make sure to tell God to let me enjoy before he calls me. And this is me and my regent, the one that takes care of business whilst I'm here. Because I talk to my people 24/7 every day. And, you know, he's the one that, you know, I communicate with all the time and to really relate to me also. And here I was thinking of how, you know, I'm going to bury my uncle. So you can see my face was really like a blanket, because this woman hasn't got enough money and I have to bury this man. He's been in a morgue for 2.5 years, which will cost about $40,000. But God's so good, I did it. And this is a woman that I chose to be one of my councilwomen, because the men were really, really fighting me so hard, and some of them were so corrupt, and I fired most of them. And she is one of the women who is so strong and level-headed that, you know, she is really there with them and tells me things. You know, women, we gossip every time. So she's the one that I gossip with. And when I started with them, most of the men don't even come to my meeting because I'm a woman. And I only have few of them in my broken palace. And that's, you know, how I started in 2009 town hall meeting. I only have like 10 or 20. But 2010, after I've done all these things for them, my palace is always full. Here is me in my throne room and with all my councilmen having a meeting with them. And that's the journey of King Peggy.
We have about 20 minutes left for additional questions. Yes, ma'am. And the microphone's coming your way.
Thank you. No question, just a comment. King Peggy, God bless you. As a woman of God and one who has traveled to Ghana several times, I know how the kings are in Ghana. I thank God for you and your leadership, but I could tell you are a Christian because you have the heart of a servant.
Thank you.
You work for your people and with your people and for their betterment, for the humanity of the people of God. So God bless you, and I thank God for your servanthood.
Thank you so much, and I will need all your prayers because it's not an easy journey. You know, I need a lot of prayers, so you always have to remember me in your prayer also.
I was disappointed at first that you said you're the third female king in Africa. But then I said, well, maybe, though, they have some plan to collaborate with each other and do something for the country. Are you in alliance with the other two women kings? And no. Do you have plans to do anything that way? Or?
Yes, yes. I realized that two other female kings, you know, I'm really blessed to be here, to have the opportunity to be able to bless my people. And I realized that two other female kings are really suffering because they have never been anywhere and they haven't got the opportunity to have people to help them. So I've made up my mind to really, you know, get in touch with them and also help them after I have finished helping my town, because I have to take care of my town first before I go to them. So I'm really, you know, also pondering of, you know, going there to help them also.
I am so, my name is Hilda Ward, and I am so blessed to be in your presence. Thank you so much. This is a wonderful experience, and I feel so proud as an African-American woman to see you sitting there. And it really makes me very happy that we have King Peggy. And I would like to ask you, have you ever felt as if you were standing alone?
No. From the beginning, I was scared. And then when the voices started talking to me and I took the position and then realized within a few years what I've been able to accomplish for my people and the strength that I have, giving myself that I didn't realize I have that such a strength, it has really made me to realize I'm not alone. I have people surrounded me. I have super beings surrounded me. Sometimes I get them in my dreams. Sometimes I sit down, it's like I'm talking to you, people talk to me. I don't know if any of you have experienced such a thing. People talk to me. And then also one thing I want to tell everybody in this room, that be ready and accept a calling. You may not be a king. You may be a leader in your family. You may be a leader in a community. You may be a leader in everywhere. When it comes, don't be afraid. Go for it. We are all on this earth for on a mission. And you can do it if I can do it. And my brother here left his work at, you know, Sydney, Australia, just he came to support me to go around the world, you know, for my book signing. And then I'm very pleased that he did, even though we've been fighting a lot since he came. But he's still my brother, and I love him. And I think that is his calling also, to come and help me. So we all have callings on this earth. And Mrs.
Thank
Diamond
you.
Came to
Thank
my
you.
Life because that is his, her calling also.
I would like to say I would love for you to come back so we all can sit down.
Oh, I
together.
Love this town.
Yes.
I really do.
Yes.
I really do. I really do. My spirit is here. I don't know why I've been, you know, really talking about it this morning. I love this place. I love it. I love it.
Yes.
I will come back. If you call me to come back, I will.
We'd love to have you back.
I'll be back.
King Piggy, I'm the program director of the book festival, so of course you have my invitation to come back anytime.
Thank you.
And
thank
Eleanor,
you.
Of course, you've been here before.
Yes.
We're so grateful to see you back. Also, I was lucky enough to go with Dave and other people, Krista and other people, to Ghana. And first of all, thank you so much. It's such a wonderful, welcoming, and you're right, happy country. But here's my question for you. I wanted to know how you and Eleanor got together and how you collaborated. And do you fight with her too?
Oh, yeah. Oh,
we did from the beginning. We had a lot of fight because Elena didn't understand my culture from the beginning.
No.
And then she just, you know, do things. And I said, we're not going to go there. And she said, we're going there. I said, we're not. And then we go back and forth. And then I would take my time to explain things to her. And she got to understand. And now we are the best of friends. And I will never live my life without Elena. Elena will never also leave me, apart from her husband. You know, Elena and I are so close. And then even if she doesn't see me or she doesn't hear from me, she make it a point to find where I am. And I'm very blessed to have her in my life.
Well, you know, when you're used to doing things on your own, and as an author, I mean, to pump out a book, it's a year or two alone in an office. I have a couple of chubby cats on my desk purring. Nobody bothers me. A couple times a year, I get an email from an editor, and I like working alone. But Peggy said, Elena, my story is so much more interesting than all those dead people you've been writing about. You know, I wrote about about Anne Boleyn and Marie Antoinette and Catherine the Great. You know, but there's one advantage working with dead people. They don't call you up and argue. And you know, when I first met Nana, she was very private. And if you read the book, there are a lot of very painful personal stories about her childhood and her marriage and her disappointments in life, you know, her issues with trying to have children. And I was afraid she wouldn't want to open up, you know, but you need to put this in a book in order for the protagonist, you know, to be sympathetic and to be real. Like, we all have stuff like that going on in our lives. Who here has not suffered pain? Anybody? You know, so, that gentleman, yeah. So... And I felt, I was surprised how easily she agreed. She started opening up and telling me stuff that blew my mind away. And I said, is it okay if we put this in the book? She said, yeah, you can put it in there. So I think that was one of the most important things that she did give me. There were some other things, some very funny stories I had written about corruption in the government, which she made me take out. But anyway, other than that.
This is Nana Dale. Another Nana. Queen Mother.
Good afternoon, Nana.
Good afternoon, Nana.
I want to ask you, from your book, you talked about adding women to your Council of Elders. Are you planning in the future to increase that number on your council?
Definitely. Definitely. I have to. It's important for me. I have to, and I'm working on it. And praying about it.
It sounds like you've done such wonderful things for your village. Have any other villages in Ghana who maybe are not lucky enough to have a female king still noticing that the good things that are happening there and taking a page out of your book, so to speak?
Lots of them. Even I do have about 10 or 12 villages before my town. I'm lucky to have electricity in my town. Most of the villages that I travel before getting to my town, they don't have electricity. They don't have anybody helping them. The kings and the chiefs over there are so dried up. And, you know, also I'm thinking of really extending my help to them. Because, you know, the more you get, you have to extend it. You know, like the schools, they go to school underneath a tree. And I always observe when I'm passing by. I don't want them to see who is in that car. I'm waiting till, you know, I get help, that I can help them. Then I can come out of the car and go to the king and help them, because they need help. All the villages, that's why I said I'm blessed to be here. Who knows, if I'm not here, I won't be able to help my people. So I was chosen for a reason. So that's why I'm saying that we all have a calling, no matter where you are. So that's my... other, you know, areas for the other kings and the queens.
Being an American citizen is such a huge advantage, because Nana is here. We sold a book to up in New York. We're getting movie offers. We're getting the word out on all of the television stations. If you're an African king in Africa and you don't have these advantages, how are you going to get money from Africa? The governments don't have any. People aren't going to give you any. So it's a great blessing, as Nana said, that she was chosen to bring this message to the rest of the world through her American citizenship.
And also, being a king or a queen in African village is very hard. Because I'm sure the government wants to help the villages. They tend to help the bigger cities, because when tourists or anyone goes to Ghana, they stop first in the bigger city, like Accra, the capital. So they tend to really help a lot with the bigger cities, Kumasi, Takoradi, and all those. But if you want to see real Africa and the sufferings, you go to the villages, and you see the real Africa and experience real Africa. And since I became the king, it has really transformed me to be able to connect with the people in the villages. And I'm so happy that I'm able to be transformed to connect with them. And I'm very proud to be connecting to my people and to be able to help them.
Equal time here. Can we hear something from your little brother?
Yes,
his Papa. Background? I mean, if he's in Sydney, he must be technically trained.
Yes.
Does he have a family?
Papa?
Yeah, I have three children, the ones that I know of.
That's Papa.
I've got two degrees. I've got intelligence and investigation, corporate white collar crime, and also got the humanitarian and international conflict resolution degree.
And I think Papa has one of the best lines in the whole book. When they were looking at the corruption and misbehavior of the royal council, he turned to her, and I was in the car when he said it, and said, "Nana, do like Henry VIII and cut off their heads."
Hello, Nana. I just want to thank you, and I have to say, you have a smile that just embraces everyone in your presence.
Thank you so much for being here. Thank you. Thank you.
Nana?
Yes, sir.
If they made a movie, is there a woman out there that can take your place? I mean, actually be the actress? Or would you
Queen Latifah.
would you argue with her?
Yeah, they've mentioned her name. Queen Latifah is going to play me.
Yeah, we're hopefully going to have a movie deal in the next week or two, and she's agreed to play.
So it's going to be the queen playing the king.
Well, again, thank you so much for enjoying your talk so much. I had two questions or two thoughts. You and your brother obviously had more education and so forth than a lot of the village people that we're seeing, so I'm wondering how that came about. I have read some of the things about you, so I know some of that. And then secondly, would you ever think about going back to Ghana to live?
First of all, we had the education because our mother told us that, you know, in this world, you have to really have education to be able to help yourself, because they're not going to be there for you all the time. So they were really on us when we were growing up. And at first I thought they didn't love us, but now that I've grown and see what the world is about, I thank them for that. I wish both of them are alive, that I'll be able to thank them, but they are not. So I always pray for them every day that I pray for God to keep them wherever they are. And also to be able to retire back home in the future. I won't be able to say it right now because I'll let the Lord direct me. I may be going back and forth, but I don't know it yet. I will let the Almighty direct me when the time comes. Yes.
Two things, ma'am.
Thank you, sir.
First, for the movie, I think you should play yourself. I don't think anybody could do it better. Second thing is, if you spend a month a year in Africa, how do you find out who the members of your community are that are corrupt? Who do you find out who the members are that you should be able to trust and replace them with?
This king here is very smart. You can look at their faces when you go on holidays, and you can tell that they have done something wrong. And as I told you also, the women, we gossip. This is my people, they gossip. In my town, they tell on each other. So whenever I call, if you have done something wrong, the first thing that they will tell me is who is doing what. So that also helped me. And especially with the woman counsel that I have, you know, she tells me a lot. And I'm always on the phone with them, no matter where I go. I remember when I went to one of my book signings in Atlanta, a woman called me about something that was going on in the town, and I called back for just 10 minutes. And before the call came, it's $400. So I said, "Papa, we're not going to do that call again." You know, it's part of me. And, you know, I talk to them all the time. And, you know, I can tell the corrupt people from the non-corrupt people. And those that are corrupt, I've weaned some of them out, but I have got a couple of them inside that, you know, I'm really working slowly, because being a king, you don't want to hurt people so much. You have to use the wisdom to do it very slowly. You just wean them by taking some of their, you know, powers. For instance, if I'm the one that I used to give money to you to build up a well whilst I'm here, I tend to really ease up on it slowly. And if it gets to a point that the money is not coming for you to do all that again, you just say, "I won't do it again." And I said, "Thank you very much for being with us. May God bless you and have a good day." That's how I work. Yes.
And she keeps some of the corrupt ones in there because that's how she gets information. Her corruption is going in there.
We have 5 minutes left. Any last questions before we wrap up?
Yes, that's what we're thinking about. You know, I've had a lot of people coming to me that they want to get some land there and invest, and also for us to have a tourism, you know, board or something to have people come, because even I do understand, since the book came out, a busload of, you know, cars, people from Germany, Canada, and Australia have been traveling
to my people to see who this Kimpegi's village is and where is, you know, her palace that we see in the book. So people have been going behind my back to my town, and I've told them that not to charge them, they should show them because I know my people. They may charge them. I said, no, they want to know if I'm telling the truth or not. So show them exactly what I've done. And, you know, what you have said is a good thing. And also we're trying to develop the beaches to have little resorts and other places that people will feel comfortable whenever they come to the town to have a place to rest and also to join my town. Thank you very much.
As somebody who also comes from Ghana and in similar situations like Kimpegi, I'm asking you, please, don't continue to drag your feet. Go. The chiefs are the custodians of the land. He will give you land. The beaches are there. Please, go. It so happens, it's unfortunate to say this, but it so happens that it takes a long time for us in the United States to get there first. Now, sadly, the Chinese are all over the place. Please, don't waste any more time. Time is running out. Africa is the next power. Please, go and be part of it. And let us be partners. We have beaches, we have land. Please. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you. Bye-bye. Thank you. Thank you, Nana. Thank you.
Okay, well, that's all the time we have. I want to thank, once again, let's give a warm Charlottesville thank you to our wonderful guest. And I believe Kimpegi will be signing books afterwards, and Ms. Herman as well. And so thank you all for coming.
On this note of what Mayor said, may I also say that I thank you all very much for coming, and may God be with each and every one of you for taking time off your busy schedule to come and listen to Kimpegi and my people. And I hope to see you all again very soon. And, you know, we are going to have a good time next time. Thank you.
For the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, I'm Dan Gould.